This episode includes exceptionally shocking graphic descriptions of violence, cannibalism, and death. Exceeding Screamcore Podcast's typical warning standards, listen with caution. Some listeners may experience discomfort, triggers, or death. The following program contains topics describing graphic violence, strong sexual content, explicit language, and elements that may not be suitable for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Armin Moos, born on December 1st, 1961, was raised by his mother after his father abandoned him at the age of 8. Armin attributed his desire for cannibalism to childhood feelings of loneliness, which intensified after his family fell apart. He linked his fascination with cannibalism to the fairy tale Hansel and Gretel, tracing its roots back to his adolescent years. Armin would soon post an online ad seeking a willing volunteer for slaughter and consumption, to which burned Jürgen Armando Brands responded. On March 9, 2001, they met at Armin's home where they filmed the amputation of Brand's genitals, which he disturbingly agreed to. Unable to consume it raw, Armin fried it, but it burnt. He then fed it to his dog. After a bath and reading, Armin fatally stabbed Brand's, recording the gruesome act. Over the next 10 months, he dismembered and ate the corpse, storing body parts in his freezer. In December 2002, Armin was apprehended after a college student reported new online ads seeking victims. Upon searching his residence, investigators discovered body parts and a videotape of the horrific murder. Diagnosed with schizoid personality, Armin was deemed competent to stand trial. On January 30th, 2004, he was convicted of manslaughter and sentenced to just 8 years and 6 months in prison. In an interview with the German newspaper, Armin confessed to cannibalizing Brands and expressed remorse for his actions. Copycat websites dedicated to Armin emerged post-arrest, with individuals seeking willing victims, with an estimated 800 cannibals in Germany. In April 2005, a retrial was ordered for Armin after prosecutors appealed his sentence, contending that he should have been convicted of murder due to killing for sexual gratification, evidenced by the videotaped crime. The court emphasized the significance of the video in refuting claims that Armin acted solely upon request. At his retrial, a psychologist noted Armin's potential for reoffending, citing ongoing fantasies about consuming the flesh of young individuals. On May 10, 2006, Armin was convicted of murder and sentenced to life imprisonment. In the early hours of April 17, 2023, the residence where the horrifying incident occurred was destroyed in a fire that broke out. Suspected to be arson, the investigation is still ongoing. As for Armin Moos, he lives out his life sentence happily in prison, advocates against cannibalism, and is a proud vegetarian.
Welcome to a world where darkness and mystery converge. Navigate the depths of horror and true crime and embark on a journey beyond the ordinary. Where everyday discussions, paranormal tales, and listener-submitted experiences blend into a realm of the unknown. In this dimension, prepare to explore the uncharted, confront the sinister, and question the very fabric of reality. You have crossed into a place where the unusual becomes ordinary, and the terrifying is just the beginning. My name is Ralph Anthony, and welcome to the Scream Queer Podcast.
Welcome back to hell, everyone. I hope you all are doing the best that you can. It's been a week, Shout out to everyone who enjoyed last week's episode and took the time to reach out. It felt great to tap into the horror aspect of the show again. And after that demonic submission, I needed an exorcism myself. I absolutely love receiving messages from some of you saying how you really enjoyed an episode or an episode really scared you. And although it does feel good, it mainly makes me happy because that means I'm doing something right here. As fucked up as that sounds, especially with this episode's true crime and topic of death. But I think this episode's format might be a start of something new, like a new series of episodes I do with Scream Crit Podcast or something kind of like my American Hookup Horror Stories. But first, let's get into one hot topic that has caught my attention recently. This one was wild. Police in Brazil have arrested a woman for allegedly wheeling her dead uncle on a wheelchair into a bank to withdraw $3,000. This happened on April 17th, 2024, just last week. And when seeing this video, I had never heard anything like it. Now, when looking into the incident, it was unclear whether it was $3,000 or $10,000, as multiple news sources have reported different amounts. A bank worker took a video on their phone of the corpse in a wheelchair being supported by the woman. You can clearly see this woman holding his head up, which keeps slumping over and moving his hands. How does this even happen? The woman even goes as far as to try and get a pen into the dead man's hand to sign a paper. Once authorities were called, paramedics arrived where they determined that her uncle had been dead for hours. I think the moral to this situation is do not will your deceased loved ones into banks for their money. I have a question for you. Who out there is familiar with the Final Destination films? Disregard the fourth installment and look at 1, 2, 3, and 5. They're all about people narrowly escaping death because of a vision one person among them has, right? Only to eventually meet their end in freaky accidents later on. And the movie's big on follow the signs and always be cautious of your surroundings, and has played a huge role in the lives of millennials around the world, including myself. The original made us afraid to fly in an airplane and to stay as far away from the street when you see a bus driving up. The sequel made driving on the freeway scary and to change to the farthest lane when realizing you're behind a truck that is carrying logs. The series continued to make everyday things scary, from roller coasters, subway stations, and even driving on bridges, which I always get anxiety about anyway. But what if I told you there were actual real life occurrences that feel similar to the films? Regular people, just like you and I, have experienced situations dodging death once, only to face their fate in unexpected ways. In the words of the legendary Tony Todd, in death, there are no accidents, no coincidences, no mishaps, and no escapes. On July 6, 2013, tragedy struck as Asiana Flight 214 crashed at San Francisco International Airport. The scene was one of chaos and panic as passengers and crew scrambled to escape the engulfing flames. Firefighters arrived swiftly, their efforts focused on containing the blaze that threatened to consume the aircraft. Amidst the frantic efforts to rescue survivors and control the fire, 16-year-old Yimeng Yuan found herself covered in fire retardant foam, rendering her invisible to the eye. Tragically, in a heart-wrenching turn of events, a fire truck, unaware of her presence, backed over her and a classmate who laid just 30 feet away. Despite the efforts of emergency responders, they were unable to save Yuan and her friend, making them the only fatalities among the 305 passengers who miraculously survived the plane crash. December 13th, 1977, a dark day for the University of Evansville's basketball team. As tragedy struck moments after their plane took off, the aircraft plummeted to the ground, claiming the lives of all the team members except one. Back home, freshman David Furr, sidelined with an ankle injury, was spared from boarding the ill-fated flight. However, fate dealt him a devastating blow just 2 weeks later when he and his brother fell victim to a drunk driver's reckless actions. With Furr's untimely passing, the entire Purple Aces basketball team roster was tragically wiped out. Controversial Jamaican political leader Marcus Garvey met a tragic end after suffering a stroke and reading his own premature obituary. While pursuing an article in the Chicago Defender, Garvey was shocked to discover the false portrayal of his death, describing him as broke, alone, and unpopular. Triggered by the cruel obituary, he suffered a second fatal stroke, sealing his fate and bringing an end to his leadership. Lynn Gilling and her husband took in their 5-year-old nephew after having survived the devastation and destruction of a tornado that obliterated his family's home. As his parents worked tirelessly to rebuild their shattered lives, tragedy struck once again when the 5-year-old nephew was having a temper tantrum. During the incident, Lynn fled to her nephew and had attempted to calm the screaming child. As fate would have it, their 150-pound bull mastiff misinterpreted the situation as Lynn being under attack and fatally mauled the child, puncturing his head and neck. Hilda Yolanda Mayol narrowly escaped the horrors of the 9/11 attacks while working inside a restaurant at the World Trade Center. However, her miraculous survival was tragically short-lived because just 2 months later, she boarded Flight 589. Unaware of the fate that awaited her, the plane tragically crashed into Queens on November 12, 2001, claiming the lives of all passengers, including Hilda's. Jessica Redfield was a survivor of the Eaton Center Mall shooting, narrowly avoiding becoming a victim by a stroke of luck. She stepped outside for a breath of fresh air, sparing herself from the carnage unfolding inside. Reflecting on her close call, she shared a quote about the eerie feeling that had spared her life. "I can't get this odd feeling out of my chest. This empty, almost sickening feeling won't go away. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around how a weird feeling saved me from being in the middle of a deadly shooting." Tragically, a month later, she lost her life at the Dark Knight Rises Theater massacre in Aurora, Colorado, where Jessica and 11 others were shot. Let's take a break. More bizarre deaths, including one possibly the inspiration for the modern horror classic, Hereditary. More Scream Crew podcast after this.
Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger. That's only scratching the surface of all things horror. Each week on Pretty Killer Podcast, we're going to butcher and dissect new episodes, diving deep into anything and everything horror. I'm telling you what, it's going to be a scream, baby.
At 21 years old, John Hutcherson acknowledged his intoxication as he drove from a bar to his Marietta, Georgia residence with his 23-year-old best friend, Francis Daniel Brome, beside him on the evening of September 2, 2004. Despite his inebriation, Hutcherson, like many in such a state, believed he was still capable of driving. The evening would take a tragic turn when Brome began feeling unwell, prompting him to lean out of the vehicle window and vomit repeatedly along the highway. Traveling the familiar Marietta Road they had traversed countless times before, the two friends suddenly encountered another vehicle on their path. In an attempt to avoid a collision, Hutcherson swerved, narrowly missing a telephone pole, but inadvertently swerving the vehicle's side mirror, which tragically struck Brom's neck, resulting in instant decapitation. Unaware of the severity of the situation due to his intoxication, Hutcherson proceeded to drive home, blood from Brom's headless body splattering throughout the car and onto himself. Upon arriving home, Hutcherson, still in a daze, climbed into bed without changing his blood-stained clothes. Several hours later, police arrived and arrested him, shocking him awake. Initially unable to recall the events of the night, Hutcherson gradually pieced together the tragic accident as police questioned him. The devastating reality of his actions hit him as officers explained the gravity of the situation. Following his arrest, Hutcherson faced charges including failure to stop, DUI, and first-degree vehicular homicide. At his 2005 trial, the Brome family, despite their immense loss, advocated for leniency, recognizing the accident as just that, an unintentional tragedy that claimed the life of their beloved son and brother. Moved by the family's plea and recognizing the absence of malicious intent, the judge sentenced Hutcherson to just 5 years in prison. 38-year-old Brian Deplich, a father of two, tragically suffocated after stumbling and falling backward into a plastic drying rack, entangling his neck between its bars. A stunned coroner remarked that Deplich had a higher chance of being struck by lightning or a meteorite. During the incident, Brian fell into the clothes rack after tripping over a stool. His neck and chest became trapped in its rungs as it collapsed. He struggled to free himself, inadvertently worsening the compression, leading to his untimely demise. Detective Inspector Mark Long suggested that Deplich attempted to free himself by inserting his right arm through one of the segments, ultimately tightening the grip. Dr. Philip Bateman, a consultant pathologist, confirmed the cause of death as asphyxiation caused by Deplich's efforts to free himself. Deplich's death was ruled accidental by the coroner. The United States Marines undergo specialized combat training as part of their Marine Corps journey. Yet, the atomic wedgie stands out as an unusual technique. This particular maneuver, notorious for its humiliating nature, is often encountered during our youth. Surprisingly, this seemingly harmless prank can be as lethal as any martial arts move, as Marine Corps veteran Bradley Davis discovered on December 21st, 2013. During a confrontation with his stepfather, 58-year-old Denver Lee St. Clair, Davis unintentionally caused fatal harm while attempting to humiliate him. Davis lifted St. Clair by his underwear and stretched the elastic band over his head. Though Davis claimed he never intended to kill his stepfather, the act led to a first-degree murder manslaughter charge and prompted the National Institutes of Health to conduct the first-ever study on wedgie-related trauma. The altercation between Davis and St. Clair unfolded in St. Clair's trailer, where they stayed overnight while Davis's mother recuperated from surgery. Insults hurled at Davis's mother instigated the physical confrontation, during which Davis, relying on his Marine Corps training, overpowered St. Clair and subjected him to the humiliating act. Tragically, the elastic band tightened around St. Clair's neck, suffocating him to death. Despite attempts to portray the incident as self-defense and alter the crime scene, Davis ultimately pleaded guilty to first-degree manslaughter and received a 30-year prison sentence. In the end, the case spurred further research into the medical implications of wedgie-related injuries. Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the Scream Queer Podcast, hosted, produced, and edited by yours truly, Ralph Anthony. Help the show grow by subscribing on your favorite platform and leave a rating and review. I always strive for fives. Connect with the podcast on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Scream Queer Podcast. And until next time, I'll scare you on the next episode. This world is fucking nuts.
In a world where the bizarre meets the absurd, where reality is just a suggestion, and where the only rule is that there are no rules, comes a podcast that's so out there, it's in a category of its own.
Okay, look. Tune in every Tuesday to the Scream Queer Podcast with me, your host, Ralph Anthony, where I'm talking true crime, horror, paranormal encounters, and my personal favorite, unpopular opinions. Tune into my wild listener submission segments that will have you sleeping with the light on, and hot topics including social issues that'll have you scratching your head saying,
wait, what?
So if you're ready to laugh, scream, and maybe even learn a thing or two, grab your popcorn, your tinfoil hats, and your sense of humor, because the Scream Queer Podcast is about to take you on a wild ride to the outer limits of absurdity. Available wherever you listen.